common for narcissists to struggle with addictions. But it's also not unusual for addicts to behave narcissistically. Does that mean those with addictions also have a personality disorder? Thank you so much for joining me on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience and a narcissistic abuse survivor. Today in this episode, we're going to explore the effects of addiction on personality, as well as the roots of narcissism, and whether or not we should hold out hope for partners who are narcissistic to make the changes we need in order to survive the relationship. Be sure to follow this podcast so that you don't miss future episodes. And if this topic resonates with you, leave me a comment or a review and let me know what you think. Finally, we're listener supported, so thank you for your contribution in helping us to educate on all things related to abuse so that this world can become a healthier place. So with that said, let's listen into this replay of a TikTok Live. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning. She was sharing with me about her past relationship with her ex, as well as her new husband's past relationship, and describing what was going on in the relationship as they were trying to adjust to this new constellation of relationships and blended families and all this dynamics. Now, this is a clinician who's loads of experience working with trauma, highly, highly talented clinician. And it goes to show how poorly informed psychologists and therapists are about narcissistic abuse. She was unaware that both her and her new husband were dealing with an extended family narcissistic abusive situation, that both her ex as well as his ex were causing all sorts of complicated problems and disrupting the family. And we make a common error when we are in these relationships. We all make them. We make them everywhere. I see evidence of it in all sorts of places. And I can give you like multiple examples of how we make this error. We assume that people generally are well-intended, that they care about others, and that they long to be rational. But when you're dealing with someone who has a personality disorder, those assumptions are not true. In fact, it's the reverse. It's almost like you're living in a inverse parallel universe where it has extremely different set rules. The rules that you think govern your situation do not govern it. For example, let's take it. You're driving on the road. You assume everybody, all the drivers on the road want to get home safely and they don't want to die. And you know that there's a set of rules that govern the driving, where you're going to stop, how fast you can drive, even how you pass. We assume that people follow these rules because everyone wants to make a home safely. And so we live in this comfort zone of, oh, we'll be rational because this is an investment. We make the same kind of social assumptions in our relationships as well, not just in driving on the road, but we make them in our exchanges with people or in interactions with people. We assume, for example, we don't want to hurt the kids, that parents are going to put the kids' needs first. We assume that we're going to be equitable. And when the divorcing process, we're going to be fair about that. We assume that we don't want to disrupt each other's lives and that we're going to go ahead and make the best of a situation that didn't work out well. We're going to make peace, move on, and have new lives. We assume that when we move into even divorces or get married or whatever we do with partners. But when you're dealing with somebody who has a narcissistic abusive narcissistic personality disorder or antisocial personality disorder or any personality disorder, those assumptions no longer work. It is a frequent question on these lives. People come in and ask me, my son has married a wife and she's causing problems, or my ex isn't being reasonable about the kids, or how do I deal with a sister-in-law who is being completely crazy and ruining our holiday, especially now that we're moving into the fall where we're not going to have any deal with holiday plans. They ruin every holiday plans. How do I make them see reason? Why wouldn't they want to make this work out so that we can have a nice holiday together as a family? Don't they know that maybe this might be grandma's last holiday with us? You think you see these big pictures and you think everybody would want to participate that and cooperate with that. Personality disorders lack flexibility and adaptability. They don't follow the same rules, and some of them, particularly those with narcissistic personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder, lack a conscience. Lack a conscience. And as a result, they don't care about the things that you care about. Feelings of other people don't matter. Being nice isn't a priority to them. Being rational and fair and equitable isn't important to them. Imagine that you lived in a world that if you didn't protect yourself, you would believe that you would be annihilated, that the world that you're in is so dangerous and works so much against you that you have to constantly be watching out for your best interest or things are going to go terribly wrong. Unfortunately, that's the world that people with personality disorders live in. That if they don't watch their backs and take care of themselves, they believe it's going to be. Now, is that true? Are you actually that cruel-hearted, hard-hearted? Are you that? Absolutely not. That is not true. But that's their perception, and it's not based on reality. It's based on lots of factors. It's based on neurological differences, childhood experiences, based upon the way that their genetics work and the skill sets they have and the deficits they have. It's based on a whole lot of things like that. A friend starting to seem like an addict, using drugs and stuff and becoming narcissistic, should I go? It sounds like you're in a relationship, like a romantic relationship with this person. Addiction is a fascinating difficulty, fascinating problem, and it does change people's personalities when they begin to abuse substances. It can even be, yes, definitely substances and alcohol is a big problem, but you can see abuse that's related to even the way we deal with work or how we handle exercise. It's not uncommon to abuse things that maybe even are normal parts of our lives, or I've even seen people abuse sex. Now, does it create the same personality changes when they abuse things that are normal parts of our lives? Yeah, I actually have seen that. I've seen where what you would see is sort of what we, in psychology, we call it pre-morbid personality. A pre-morbid personality is how you are normally when you're healthy. And then what happens is that we watch what happens when you're in the condition or the illness, what happens to your personality. Usually there's personality changes, and that's what you're reporting. There's changes. With addictions, it does create change, and some of the changes look very close to narcissism. There is this entitlement, lack of empathy for others, extreme manipulation, exploitation, a lot of deception in order to feed the addiction. And it's all about the maintenance of the addiction. Interestingly enough, they find that when people really get well and the addiction comes to the end and they're clean and sober, really working on the program, that their personality does return back to the way that it was before they were like that. So is it not a permanent change you're seeing, Char? Now, the problem is, how do you get someone to get well? Well, you can't. In fact, your efforts to make this person well, chances are going to make you sick as you try to save them. This is what we call in the field, they have to hit rock bottom. They have to sort of come to the end of themselves and realize that it's not working. And the best way to do that, which is very, very painful for those around them, is to remove your support of anything that supports the addiction. And often it means removing yourself from the relationship, because they have to realize there's consequences to this devastating, destructive behavior. And the way that they know is by your disappearance, by your lack of participation, by your healthy boundaries. That's how they know. Unfortunately, probably you're going to have to set better boundaries to protect yourself. Does it mean you need to leave the relationship? I don't know, but that's something only you're going to know based upon what you're dealing with. But it sounds like a tough situation. Would you be interested in meeting in person? Maybe you'd like to have a one-on-one appointment that's face-to-face. Well, on October 15th, I, along with 9 other narcissistic abuse content creators and coaches, will be live to meet you in Austin, Texas at the Deva Deva Labs. That includes Lee Hammack of Mental Healness, Lisa Sunny, Stronger Than Before, Catherine Kleiss, Stand Coaching, Trey De La Torre of I Was Like Yo, Trey, Nia Renee, How to Love a Battered Woman, along with many others, just to name a few. We'll be hosting a 90-minute VIP forum where you'll be taking your questions along with the one-on-ones and a public meet-and-greet from 3 to 6 p.m. If you'd like to go, please register for the event through the link in the show notes below. I can't wait to see you. There are three groups of personality disorders when it comes to changing and improving. And I make this comment hesitantly because the first group is the group that we keep hoping we're in a relationship with, but chances are you're not, because that group is a small majority. So I say this very, very hesitantly, but it's called the three rules when it comes to personality disorders. The first group, which I said is small and rare, is if you confront them and address, say that there's a problem, they often will get worse briefly, maybe push you quite a bit, and then you might see some shows of improvement. Now, what do I mean by improvement? Remember I said that this personality disorders is a deficit. It's a personality trait deficit. They will have to learn new ways of compensating for a lack of empathy and new ways of compensating for difficulty with self-reflection and really not being distressed and conflicted when they hurt somebody. They have all these losses and lacks, and they're going to have to learn new ways to do that. They have to care enough, have something enough inside of them for that to matter, for them to get help. Do you see how unusual, how rare that is? I don't know many people. That group, I would say, some of the self-aware narcissists that are on TikTok as well as on Instagram, I would say fit in that category. They've done something that's made them pause enough. Maybe they've had their own bottom that made them realize that they just can't stand themselves. I knew of that. There is a therapist out of Florida who does a lot of work with sexual addiction. He is a self-aware narcissist as well. He says openly, he's been interviewed. I've heard him on a podcast saying, "I'm never not going to be a narcissist. I never think I'm going to be arriving." But he said he got to the place where he thought if he didn't change, he could no longer live with himself and was about to take action. That he felt that the person he was so horrible that he was in a bind. And that's what forced him to take this big, long, hard look at himself and do some deep work. That group, though, is very, very rare. I know, being a narcissistic relationship myself, I really hoped my partner fit that group. I tried everything I could. I got us into therapy. We did couples therapy, did lots of stuff. I kept thinking there was maybe new explanation or some new angle, or maybe I'd change or get whatever. Right? I mean, there was a lot of work that I did trying to save the relationship. And my guy was not in that first category. Most of us who are in a relationship with somebody who has this disorder does not have somebody who's in this first group. And I know for those of us who don't, who are not in a relationship with someone who's in this first group, there's a lot of jealousy. I'll tell you, it feels unfair because I've put the same work in as anybody else who gets to have their relationship preserved. Why don't I not walk away and have the benefit of that? I don't. Most of us won't. So my heart goes out to most of us who experience that. So that's group number one. Group number two, you confront them and they actually get worse. They get worse. And how many of us have seen that? You drag them to couples therapy. They learn more about what's happening, the inside of it. They learn more about you. You go home and then they turn around and they weaponize what they've learned. Mine got better at hiding. That's how what mine did. Mine got worse through his deception. He figured out ways to kind of just really ramp up and make me believe one reality when actually a whole another reality was existing. He just got way more sophisticated. And he fooled the therapist too. So most of us are in that group. We're in group number two. The third group is the group that scares me. And this is the group that you confront them, you ask for change, and they get dangerous. They get dangerous. It's scary on two levels. It's scary because you're at risk. You know, now they could become lethal, and that's a problem. Do you know how to protect yourself? Do you recognize that? Are you taking steps to take care of that? But it's also dangerous on a second level because they wear what's called a mask of sanity, which makes them look like they're living by normal societal standards, that they're reasonable people, but they're not. So behind closed doors, you see the more, not always, but you see a little closer to the truth, but the public around you is not seeing it, and they're going to think that you're hysterical, You're the one exaggerating, that it isn't that bad, and you're going to get bad advice. They're going to tell you that you don't need to go filing a restraining order. You don't need a personal protection order. They're going to give you very, very bad advice because they don't see this, because this person in public does such a good job. Again, at this conversation I had with this friend this morning, the partner, her partner's ex was so good that this partner actually anticipated what they would do at a big public event, so that when they did it, the partner could say, "See, I told you. Look how unreasonable they are. Look how hysterical they are. They make a big deal about nothing. Can you believe the way they'd hurt me? I tried. I reached," and without everyone else knowing that they were being set up. It's wild. It's wild. So which group are you in? Well, chances are you're in probably group number 2 and maybe number 3. I have a survey that helps you to know whether or not you're in a relationship with a narcissist, or if you're in a relationship with somebody who's an antisocial personality disorder, or if you got a relationship with somebody who's a blend of both. But I want to add another variable in that it measures, and that is maybe that you're in a relationship with somebody who actually maybe has narcissistic traits, but they're invested in things getting better. That's free, by the way. It's just a questionnaire that you can take, and it gives you some information. That might be something you want to check out. She's going through a divorce and he's dragging it out, refusing to negotiate. How do you speed this up? Well, that's back to where I was starting today, talking about this. As long as they know that's going to hurt you because they do not follow the rules of civility, he will drag it out, or she will drag it out. They want this to hurt you. That's the goal. The goal is to make it painful for you. Their investment isn't closure. They don't care. There's no closure. Their investment is that they really stick it to you. What do you do about that? Well, you can't really stop it. I mean, the legal system is a system that moves the way that it moves. You don't have a lot of control about that. How many of us have a lot of frustrating experiences with that? So your best way is not to let it control you, and for you to live your best life while this is happening. I know that's hard because there's parts of your life I'm sure that are on hold. Maybe there's, like, you can't sell certain things and you're waiting for that. Maybe you're wanting to move, but you can't move because you can't wrap things up to move. Maybe you're wanting to move into another relationship, but, you know, maybe you have ethics around that you don't want to start dating when you're not technically divorced. I get that. I get that this is impacting you. But that's the point. This person wants you to hurt. He wants it, or she wants it, to impact you this way. I can't make that not happen. Your only piece of control is how you react around that, whether you let it impact you. Tough. That's tough. How much of a personality disorder is actually genetic? There are three active working theories on why people have personality disorders. And there's still a lot we don't know, but I can tell you what the research is bearing out. The one that you hear most often on internet is called the adversive childhood theory. It's where we say to people, oh, they had a traumatic background. Something bad happened. They came from a dysfunctional family. We say something happened to this person and that's why they have a problem. That's actually been disproved. Please hear me. It's disproved. There's no research supporting that. And they looked at it in different directions. They looked at it from the angle of, does abusive childhoods or abusive trauma experiences lead to personality disorders? No, there's not a strong correlation. Does not lead. We all know loads of people who've had very bad things happen to them who do not have personality disorders. We also know people who have personality disorders who have no childhood trauma. And I know it's tempting to say, well, maybe there's something we don't know about. And if they could remember. No, they've done the studies and there's just not the connection. I think it's appealing. It's an appealing theory because they're good at making us feel sorry for them. They like that because it gives them an out. Well, I can't help myself. I had a bad childhood. Therefore, that's why I am the way that I am. Well, a lot of us had bad childhood. We all need that break. So please know it's not related to trauma. It's not related to bad childhood. Solid research in. It's been disproved. If you'd like to see the references, I have them. I'd be happy to share them with you. Second theory is that it's genetic. They've done twin studies. It's not 100%. I actually was looking at it. the rates of, it's called concordance rates. In other words, how often does it, if you have an identical twin raised in an identical home, how often, how likely is that twin, or even if they're raised separately, to show the same presentation as you? It runs for narcissists, it's 77%. Twins are likely to have the same condition 77% of the time. For antisocial personality disorder, the rates of concurrence is 80%. Now, it's not 100. If it was all genetic, we'd say it should be 100, right? Because that would be the best predictor of that. So what else is happening here? Here's the tricky part. Our brains are very adaptable, very malleable, they're very changeable. When you're growing, especially when you're growing up, your brain's not really fixed and fully formed and mature until like 25 to 27 years old. In that period of time, what happens to you in your life has effects on the brain. They've known for a long time that if you put a child in a very deprived environment without good stimulation, without good exploration, chance to explore and learn new things and have people talk to them and all of that, their intelligence level will be less than what it could have been if they had been more challenged and had a broader experience, a more variety experience. We know that environment shapes us mentally. The thought is that it's primarily genetics, but it has biosocial implications. So you could have someone with a genetic precursors for it, and then environment comes in and helps set that, helps makes that happen. Now, this is the good news, because that also means environment can help shape you into helping learn new traits and to develop the skill sets that you're poor on. So the way to know if this is happening to one of your kids is to ask yourself this question. Does this kid always been this way? Or is this just something new and maybe it's a developmental stage? That's how you're going to kind of know if you're seeing some personality traits that are maybe concerning. But it's always good for us to be raising our children with good mental health, with learning how to cope with emotions, learning how to control themselves, maintain good impulse control, know how to deal with a whole range of emotions. I've been watching a show on Apple TV called Trying. I'm in the third season, and the couple has adopted two children who are like, I would say they're like ages 6 and 10, maybe six or eight, something like that. And I love, because they've been showing a lot about what they've been trying to do to help these kids have better mental health, better emotional health. I just love how they're doing that, how they're really practicing that. And I think we all should be more conscious about that. And maybe we'd start to see the rates go down. You know, it's interesting that the rates of all of this are going up. There are more and more personality disorders.
As I said in the podcast today, I have a free survey available to anyone who's interested in finding out if you're in a relationship with someone toxic, dangerous, or capable of change. You can find it through the link in the show notes. And thank you so much for joining me here today on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I look forward to seeing you back here on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend. Until then, bye-bye.